off a bit?
No, it helps in that time frame where you're there and you're constantly doing it, but you still have those days to where you're just having those issues, those moments per se that you're going through it in your mind and thinking about it, like, let me try to figure something out to get my mind busy and get it off of this or what's coming around and what's coming into your mind. So it's hit and miss. You know, you could be doing really well for months. When I was doing the physical talking twice a week, and I think I was doing it for almost a year, I was doing really well. But then again, I was still in the Marine Corps, so I was around everything that I was involved with, everything that I loved doing. I was around my Marines every day, so it kept my mind busy. But as soon as I retired and tried to make the transition from the military and going 100 miles an hour every day, all day, especially on deployment, and then coming to the civilian side and learning how to downshift, you know, basically from like fifth to first, it's a hard transition. And having somebody or being able to contact somebody to talk about it to keep your mind busy is harder when you're not around the specifics. When you're around, it's so much easier because you got a constant conversation with somebody in your area that knows you well, and you can discuss those things. When out here, it's a lot harder unless you have your support or your specific doctor or your therapy that you go to. And for myself, well, that's why I haven't gotten into a support group out here, because I haven't found the right one. And finding the right one, I think, is a big thing depending on the person who it is. And someone could just be going through the motions, just saying, I'm doing it. But if you're serious about it, you got to find that right therapy and the doctor that can understand it and enjoys sitting talking to you and gets you to talk about it. That's, I think, the main thing.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for sharing that. Jamal, you wanted to say something.
Yes, a question for Dante and also for Lawrence as well. This kind of comes in from Facebook from Chris. He's talking about talk therapy, you know, saying that's the most effective way. And I was just wondering, you know, just from a civilian's standpoint, someone who's never been in the military, is it possible to achieve a level of peace with just talk therapy or with just medication, or is a combination of both needed? Is one, in your experience, more helpful than the other? And what are your thoughts on that?
Let's hear it from Lawrence real quick. Well, Lawrence, what do you say to Jamal's question?
For me personally, transitioning back, like, while I was in, it was no meds, just sitting there, you know? And then a lot of this stuff, due to the fact that, you know, outside of a deployment, back at wherever your home base was, I was carrying a weapon every day, you know? You know, like the rest, everybody doesn't carry a weapon to work every day. But seeing how security forces, my job is to carry a weapon with me every day, you know? So, you know, I'm talking to 9mm M4 daily, you know? So you didn't want to go to therapy or this, that, and the third due to the fact of my career field, because one, you didn't want to lose your job, anything like that, or anything like that. So you, like I said earlier, you put in the box right now, and you look, you know, you look to your right, to, you know, your brothers or your sisters that they go down range with, you know, and they helped you through it. So basically we were, barracks doctors, we called each other. You know what I mean? Because they understood what you were going through. Mm. They understood how you felt, you know, or trying to transition back in with your family. You just don't feel right. You know what I mean? Because you lost so much time.
Lawrence, I want to ask you just real quick with that. Is it, and I don't know if this is two part, you know, I'm not a journalist, but I like to dig deep sometimes. And maybe you can or cannot talk about this. When you're deployed, is it possible for individuals who are deployed to be on medication while deployed?
No.
So there's medication you can't.
So not anything to take you off the, you know, anything to That's not going to keep you alert? Nope. Mm.
So, Lawrence, what you're telling me is, or what you're telling us, is that there are people in the military that are going through PTSD while they're in the military, kind of fighting through things, and it's either due to them not admitting it because of the stigma that comes with that, or because they're worried about their military career and that ending abruptly. So they kind of hold on to that, and they work through that on their own, is what you're telling me, while they're in the military.
Yes, sir.
Wow.
Yeah, I can tell you that for a fact. And it's not, like I said, I know for a fact it's not just me, because I'm still in contact with, you know, majority of people I deployed with, stationed with, some for my whole military career.
And so I heard Dante saying yes in the background there. Dante, I mean, you have very similar experience with yourself?
Oh, exactly. For years, it's you try to deal with it on your own, and it's just day to day. You don't want to take your meds while you're in, because you don't want to, you don't, like you said, you don't want to, anything that's going to take you away from being alert or causing you to reshift focus, or, you know, you don't want to be worried about those certain things while you're out on deployment, and depending on, you know, your environment or the theater you're in, you can't have that. And that's what your brothers in arms are there for. You know, you have that, those gentlemen there to talk to if you're having any issues, but you're still 100 miles an hour while you're there. You're not really having any issues. You're in where you want to be. It's just, you just constantly moving, constantly moving. Something's always going on to keep your mind completely busy. I think that's why that we have issues with the PTSD, is because we're there, like, so much, we're so deep into it, and then when we come home, it's completely stopped, and we're so used to flowing and moving and being routine that we don't have time to get distracted with it. But when we come home and we're trying to readjust in the society, it's a lot harder, because you don't have that 100 miles an hour every single day. You have a lot of downtime. I mean, when I'm home at night, my mind is running, and it's so hard to sleep. It's constantly running. It's like, dang, it's already 3 o'clock in the morning. I got to get up in 3 hours.
So it's like you cut off the faucet when you're deployed, but then as soon as you get home, you have all that time and space, and then the faucet just opens and it just flows.
Exactly.
Wow.
And so I want to talk to Dr. Wills, get her opinion on this. So as a mental health professional, does what Lawrence and Dante are describing, is this a little alarming to you, that while they're in the military, and, you know, for the reasons they've explained, they can't really divulge what they're going through, but is it concerning to you that they're unable to deal with it while they're on the job? Is that, what, from your perspective, what do you say about that?
Yeah, that it's unfortunate that our military folks aren't able to openly get the treatment that they need even while they're deployed, given sort of the social forces that sort of have them hide their symptoms or share with each other, but not with mental health professionals. That is very unfortunate that's the culture, that folks, that it is perceived as showing a weakness as opposed to getting the medical attention that one needs to be able to do their job more effectively. So I do find that to be very, very disturbing. To answer the Facebook user's question about whether or not medication versus therapy, which one works better, I don't like to think of it in that sort of putting one against the other. Everyone is different. I would start with therapy for folks who are having these types of symptoms, and then might do some targeted medication management if that's what they wanted to do, right? So medication is a choice. It's not anything that we can force on anyone. But if someone wants medication for sleep or if someone wants medication for nightmares, we do have medications that can address lack of sleep or having nightmares. We use Prazosin for nightmares, and we can use any of the sleep agents that we have for sleep. So I wouldn't say either or, one is better. I would say in combination, we find the best results, but we start with therapy, and then if it talk therapies, and we can go over the different kinds of talk therapies, and then we can add medication if that's necessary or indicated on a case-by-case individualized basis.
And Dr. Woods, I got a question, because if someone can't take medication while they're deployed because they have to be alert, it's, you know, it's a very serious job, and they can only resort to talk therapy, I mean, like talking with, you know, their brothers or, you know, your sisters, and all these are two men, but women in the military as well. How do they go about that? Because I know you mentioned, let's say if nightmares and medication is supposed to help you with nightmares, but you can't take medication, then how would you, I guess, address that issue?
Right. And then that's when you use the therapy. And we can talk about the different types of therapies that are available. There are behavioral therapies where you try to expose people to similar circumstances to then desensitize them to it. That's called exposure therapy, that behavioral therapy. And then there's the cognitive behavioral therapy, where you do sort of cognitive restructuring around the events that happened. There's also a family therapy, group therapy. I think Dante mentioned being in a group therapy setting. Those type settings are very, very helpful, so that people can talk about it as in a group, and it's normalized.
Well, my question with that is, if someone's deployed overseas, should the military, I'm thinking, have something in place where they have some type of therapies? Because medication is totally out the window. When someone's overseas, I feel like maybe the military, and maybe Dante Lawrence can answer this as well. If, other than just talking to your brothers, is that really all you can do? Is there nothing set up in place when you're overseas to talk about issues or anything?
I don't think there is. I think when we're in theater at the main hub or base where you're at as you're coming into country and before you go out to your forward, your FOBs, I think we only have chaplains. I don't believe we have any kind of doctors with the that can do the therapy that are on bases. I haven't ran into it. I haven't heard about it, but I know when we're in staying in on the forward observation base, we didn't have anything but corpsmen. We had no chaplains, no nothing out there.
Oh. Do you think that would benefit you if you guys had?
Well, I'm sorry. Let's hear from Lawrence real quick.
Well, okay, for Afghanistan, okay, and Bagram. Bagram's the main hub in Afghanistan, and Bagram there's everything. You know, like Dante, I was in a FOB, forward operating base. There's absolutely nothing out there, you know. I was an hour away convoy away from Bagram.
Lawrence, when you're in a FOB in a forward operating base, how your deployment at a FOB can be how long?
365, a year.
So wait, you're telling me you wouldn't go to Bagram at all? You would stay at the FOB for 365 days?
So if you didn't have a reason to go to Bagram,
right?
You've never seen Bagram.
Are you kidding me?
Only time you've seen Bagram is like
when you're flying in and flying out,
or you're going to R&R.
R&R, gotcha.
You'll do 6-7 months, and then they'll send you home for a couple weeks, and then you come right back and finish off the rest of your tour.
So you could potentially be at a forward operating base in the middle of the mountains of Afghanistan for a full year with very limited resources available for you.
No. For 2 weeks, you get to go home. Or you get to go somewhere for 2 weeks. You get R&R for 2 weeks.
For how often would that happen?
Like I said, you're 6 or 7 months. So you'll be at your farm for 6-7 months.
Got it. Which is still a long, long time without available resources.
Oh yes, sir. I mean, because like I said, when you're at a farm, you just have each other. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, we had our corpsmen. You know, we had our you know, our doctors, you know, we brought out and stuff like that, you know, but they were for medical use, not for mental use, you know. Mm-hmm. And they were just for, and they had like a limited supply of meds there that they were accounted for, you know what I mean? As far as like painkillers or headache medication and stuff like that, they were allowed to give you. But other than that, no. I mean, because even then, if you went to go see a chaplain, like the majority of people who went to go see a chaplain or anything like that, if they were having marital issues or something like that, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But as far as like your mental state out there, you didn't want anybody. You made sure that you were straight while you're out there because you're busy. You're in it. You're just going. You know what I mean? You're part of that motor, that cog, and all you do is go.
Mm-hmm. Just go. Yeah, similar to what Dante was saying, go, go, go. Right. And so we actually have another caller on the line who's calling into the Urban Cafe. Again, great conversation about post-traumatic stress disorder or syndrome. And so we listened to the Urban Cafe. Mark is calling in. Good morning, Mark.
Yes, hello. Am I on?
Yes, you are. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing very well. To all you listeners out there, it is such a regret that Nancy Pelosi died. No, not Nancy Pelosi, but the health lady that used to call in a long time ago.
Oh, the health lady that used to... I'm not familiar with that. We do have Dr. Wills here in the studio, though.
Okay, well, here is another one. I have a hydrogen water maker, a three-plate hydrogen water maker.
Mm-hmm.
Look up 27 benefits of hydrogen water. This stuff will save your life. You don't need no doctors. You don't need no pills.
But how does that relate to post-traumatic stress disorder, sir?
Oh, it just may help them out also. It relieves stress. It gives you energy.
Okay.
If you have fatigue, you ain't going to have no fatigue no more. Don't you drink this stuff at nighttime because you ain't going to sleep.
Okay. So we're talking about post-traumatic stress disorder, and Mark has been so kind enough to call in saying that he believes a great solution to dealing with the symptoms may also be hydrogen water. And we're also going to let Dr. Wills talk in a few minutes about what we talked about therapy and some medication as well as possible solutions for that. So Mark, thank you very much for that. We're going to jump to
benefits of hydrogen water. Tell them to look that up.
I will definitely, we'll look that up.
It is a lifesaver.
Okay.
Everything. It even staves off cancer. It gets rid of arthritis and everything.
Thank you, Mark. We really appreciate that. And so now we have another caller here, Chris, calling in from Clearwater. Good morning, Chris.
Oh, good morning. I guess I'm so fortunate to come after Marcus because I would support what he just said, that even though it's not what I'm calling about, that molecular hydrogen, if you want to look up clinical studies, there are water ionizers that produce molecular hydrogen in the water. It has ionized water and many other properties as well. Many clinical studies on it. A lot of folks say that there aren't studies, but if you do a search, not on ionized water, but on...
But Chris, how does this relate? You're saying that this can help people with PTSD?
It does. Actually, a friend of mine who suffers from post-traumatic stress, it's not a disorder, but post-traumatic stress
syndrome, yeah.
In 2010. And, it really has amazed me since I bought an ionizer. You want to make it fresh with an ionizer because you can't buy it since the properties will degrade over about a week. So I was saying if you look up molecular hydrogen or the term electrolysis ionized water, electrolysis reduced water, electrolyzed anode water, electrolyzed oxidizing water or alkaline antioxidant water, you can find a lot more on that. But what I was calling about was that I think there's some confusion about when I was commenting on your Facebook Live post or Facebook Live feed. I'm Chris Steiner there, and I wasn't suggesting that you do talk therapy or medication or choose one or the other. I found that those who experience post-traumatic stress, they get on medications and then they have adverse side effects, or some would say the direct effects of aggravating their symptoms, especially over time. And then they try to get off them and because they want to get their range of emotions back, and they find it very difficult, and even their symptoms are even worse than they were in the first place. So I would say maybe get in and get out with medications if you need them. That's my advice to that. I have an acquaintance who's a medical doctor, and I asked him about my friend who was trying to get off his medications and to get his range of feelings back. I asked him, well, what do you say to people like that? And he doesn't have anything to offer, so he says, well, good luck. So on your Facebook Live feed, I also posted some nutritional items, supplements, and botanicals. Like essential oils, I've heard, are very good for people suffering post-traumatic stress. I've heard some of some folks like Lang Lang or lavender, eucalyptus, rosemary, and there are many, many other, you know, frankincense, many other essential oils that can also help. But nutrition, I think, is key, like, you know, your essential fatty acids that promote nerve health, because they your nerves are coated. 80% of your insulation of your nervous tissue and brain cells are coated with fat, the myelin sheath. So when that degrades, a lot of people are deficient in essential fatty acids, but when you have a myelin sheath degradation, then you're basically having your nerves short out. So that's important. A CBD oil, I like my essential fatty acids.
And thank you, Chris. We appreciate that. And actually, I think that's a very important part of the conversation, right? Mm-hmm. Nutrition as a method of being able to bounce back from PTSD or PTSS, or at least be able to manage the symptoms in a more natural, healthy way. I know Jerome would be proud that we're having this conversation.
Absolutely.
So, Chris, we're going to jump to a break real quick. You can stay on the line. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation about post-traumatic stress disorder. We have Dante and Lawrence, both veterans of foreign wars, and they have some, you know, great details about what it is like to live with PTSD.
This is my house, you made it personal. It's always trouble when they go too far. Nobody messes my family. Father, father, could you bless his soul? He told me crazy, I may lose control. It's always trouble when they go too far. Nobody messes my family.
I would say they were educating people for jobs that have already died. The traditional system, the status quo, is still teaching To Kill a Mockingbird.
That's right.
Still teaching Animal Farm. And they're not teaching them as classes, they're teaching them as literature. I mean, it's okay to read such things, but there have been other great books that carry the same themes that are being written as we speak by people of color.
Absolutely, absolutely. Things fall apart, Chinua Achebe.
But even that, right? There's still things being written as we speak by young brothers and sisters who are powerful in their voice that would deeply and quickly connect with the current students. Why is that important? Because once I can convince you that you can learn, then you will learn.
Absolutely.
And so the way to address the achievement gap at its core is to make sure that we explain or show children this cool stuff is for you. It's 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 for you.
This is Roman of the Urban Cafe, and I would like to take this time to thank those of you who have called into our show in the past. Now remember that we welcome your voice, and it's better to call earlier than later to ensure that your voice is heard. The number is 813-239-9663. We would love to hear from you.
WMNF's winter membership drive begins at 6 a.m. on Wednesday, February 6th, and ends on February 13th. We're now seeking restaurants, caterers, and chefs to feed our volunteers taking your pledges. Do you own or work for a food establishment? We have many ways to thank you. Find out about donating drinks, snacks, or a meal by contacting Miss Julie at 813-238-8001 or emailing missjulie@wmnf.org.
Welcome
back.
Good morning, Tampa Bay area.
Good morning.
You listen to the Urban Cafe on WMNF 88.5. We're having a very, very wonderful and serious conversation about what it's like to live with post-traumatic stress disorder, what post-traumatic stress disorder is, post-traumatic stress syndrome, I've learned today, through Dr. Wills here in the studio. We got two wonderful guests on the phone, both veterans of foreign wars. They both served in Iraq and Afghanistan, did multiple tours. Just it's kind of harrowing listening to these experiences and mm-hmm. what they had to deal
Absolutely.
With personally to avoid being frowned upon within their society, which was a military society, right? Mm-hmm. And so the fact that they couldn't take drugs, they could, their only therapy was an unofficial therapy among themselves, among their comrades. And so I believe...
Or just closing it out. So I had a question about system, right? So I feel like we oftentimes just talk about like the surface stuff, like what happens when they come back, like how do we respond to that? But for me, it's a systemic issue, right? If we know the majority of our military are going to face symptoms of PTSD or PTSS, then why aren't we fixing it at a systemic level? So I think my question for Lawrence and or Dante is, what do you think would have worked? Do you think it would have worked early on to, like, while you're in the military and as soon as you start to notice these changes in you and kind of how you're walking through the world, would it have been better for you to be able to bring it up early on and then you could kind of process through and work through whatever issues that you're struggling through, so when you get out of the military, it's not that faucet opening and all of a sudden your family and your friends and all of them are feeling it at this very intense level because it wasn't addressed while you were in the military. Do you think, and this is for Lawrence and or Dante, do you think that would have helped for you to have been able to respond to it while you were in the military?
To respond to it while we're in the military?
To bring it up, to try to address it.
Not to have to quote-unquote hide it, but be a little more open with it without it being considered jeopardizing your career.
I mean, to say the truth, I don't have the answer for that. I mean, because I know no other way. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
When you only know one way, and I mean, that's not something that you can have an answer for, due to the fact that it is the way it is. You understand? It's not like we don't take care of each other, which we do, you know, wholeheartedly. But I don't know. You just never want to be viewed as that weak.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? So you just, it is what it is. You know what I mean? Like,
And Dante, from your perspective, I mean, is there something that would have helped you be able to manage this while you were in active theater?
I'm not sure if it would have an end result that you would be looking for, because each deployment, depending on, you know, where you're going, it differs. You're going to have, like, my first deployment wasn't as bad as expected. My second got a little bit hairier, and my third one was by far my hardest deployment. So I think if you're taking a step through each one, each deployment, and each issue that you're having, it'd be kind of hard to pinpoint, because it's constantly changing. The focus around is constantly changing, and it's just a buildup of everything, not just one specific thing.
So Dante, you mentioned that the third time was your most difficult. Was that because the circumstances on the ground were a little more harrowing, or because it was your third time and here you have to deal with this all over again for a third time?
No, it was because of boots on the ground and the environment that we're in.
Got it.
So many guys that you lose while you're there. And, you know, mm-hmm. in the 7 months we were there, we lost 27 guys.
Oh, my gosh.
And nine were in the first, was the first 2 weeks.
Wow.
And, you know, it's a, depending on what you see, plays a big part in it. And there in Sang in Afghanistan, there was a lot going on in that 7-8 months we were there.
Damn.
A lot.
So I'm coming back to the system question. So I got to be honest, I'm struggling through it. Like, I'm struggling through, we have the biggest part of the federal government, right? The military. And we know this thing is happening to a lot of people, a lot of our military that are coming out of it. We know this thing is happening. So I'm struggling that it's just accepted. Like, we, and I respectfully say this, but I just can't imagine that we're just accepting, like, okay, that's the reality of it. Let me ask this. Is it, does the government, when you go in, do they have a conversation about it? Do they talk about it? Do they acknowledge this is a real thing that may or may not happen to you? So check yourself, you know, make sure that you're doing what you need to do to be able to reflect on when you start noticing some changes in you. Are they minimally doing that? Are they minimally talking about it when you go in and throughout your service?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
I don't recall it. I mean, so far, I mean, from back in... Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. Well, go ahead.
Go ahead, Dante, and then we'll go to you, Lawrence.
So long ago, when I first came in 93, it wasn't discussed as much because there was a lot of garrison work. There was no deployments going on in 93. Nothing really. You know, not a lot of major conflicts going on back in 93. I think over time now, maybe, possibility they are. I have no idea if they are or not when they are being introduced into the military, but... I know when I went through, there was no talk about it.
And Lawrence, what is your...
I mean, as far as like... Say the question one more time so I can answer it.
So I'm just wondering if the military, when you... Either in the beginning of your service, throughout your service, or at any point during your military service, did the government have conversations with you? Were there people that talked to you? Was there like a introduction to PTSD and here are some of the symptoms to watch out for? Just prepping you for something.
Yes. You know, like I said, I've been both Iraq and Afghanistan. And in Taurus, like my... second to last deployment in Afghanistan, like they were more on the, you know, on the ball for PTSD.
Okay.
And again, prior to, you know, like when you're mustering up, everybody's getting, you know, getting all your stuff together to deploy because you have to out process your base to get ready to go to your training center and all stuff like that and all that. And during that time frame of you out processing, from your, you know, your home base, they had, you know, all that stuff going up, but it didn't matter, you know, at all. I mean, yeah, they talked about it, but again, you never want to be seen mm-hmm. as that weak link,
mm-hmm.
you know, because if you don't go or you failed your screening and you didn't push past your screening, you're screwing someone else. You're taking them out of their deployment bucket and away from their family. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm.
So you did whatever it was. You got your act together so you can go out the door with the people you've been going out the door with, so you're not screwing over the individual. Because I've been one that I, you know, I volunteered, you know, cause, you know, a couple of times due to the fact that I didn't like my home base. So I'm like, anything is better than being here. But you screw other people over with who it was not time for them to go away from their family, and now they're gone for 6 months. They come back home for maybe another 6 months or 8 months or maybe a year, and then they're right back out the door doing their own deployment. You know, and that was something that's something you didn't do.
And so, something I want to talk about is, and this is. It's interesting that in the conversation of PTSD, this is coming up again. We've talked about taking medication or not taking medication, how it's up to the person. This has come up time and time again when we're talking about mental health disorders or syndromes, be it whatever they may be. And so, doctor, if for those, is there nothing other than for if you can't take drugs because of the job requirements,
mm-hmm.
and there is no therapy available to you, what else is there?
Yeah.
Meditation? Yoga? I don't know.
Right then, that's when you go to your diet, your exercise, your supplements, those sorts of things, making sure that you have a strong support network. And it sounds like they absolutely had that within calling each other barrack doctors and that sort of thing. That's what you have to use as your natural support system, whatever is in place.
Okay. All right, and so we have another caller, Peter, calling in from St. Petersburg, Florida, here today. Good morning, Peter. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, thank you. Great discussion. And I think that, you know, I don't know really, I kind of came into the discussion late. I wasn't listening from the beginning, so I apologize. But
no problem.
Just trying to get a sense of if we're really just, are we talking about PTSD, PTSS?
Well, we're talking about both, actually. So I was telling the listeners earlier, Dr. Wills...
specifically to just military, or
no.
Talking about...
No, we're talking about it as a whole, and actually I'm glad you called to mention that, because we do want to get into the conversation that this is not just military personnel. Obviously, the fact that it happens in the military has, I feel, led the conversation to greater heights, but this is not just, this also happens to civilians as well. So go ahead, Peter.
Yeah, really, and that was my purpose of calling in, was to try to take it out of the context, because a lot of people really believe that this illness, if you will, or syndrome is restricted only to people that have seen combat, but it really applies to people that are, you know, it can be anything such as a very stressful job on a day-in, day-out basis. You know, whether that is being an airline pilot or a commercial fisherman, it can happen to those people as well. It can happen to, as we know, first responders, and there seems to be a lot of recent news about first responders, you know, sadly tragic news because of their high rate of suicide. But, you know, firefighters in particular, they are really exposed to some of the worst carnage in automobile accidents. Firefighters are usually the first ones to respond because of the threat of you know, a vehicle fire, but also, you know, they've got the equipment, the jaws of life, and different things where they can work those tools to extract people. I myself was on a Sheriff's Department water rescue team for 8 years. You know, that's got its own stressful moments where you're dealing with drowning situations most of the time. Very seldom do you get a chance to save a life, but you're really there to bring closure to the family by trying to just, recover the remains. It may be a crime scene. Maybe you need to look for a weapon. I think it's important, and victims of crime, victims of violent crime, serious assault, having a gun pulled on you, stuck in your face, being shot. You know, this is the kind of thing that can really pop up in society, and there are a lot of other victims out there besides military personnel, and I just kind of wanted to redirect that conversation just a little bit to try and, for those that might be listening, to just clarify this, because a lot of people think that it does not happen outside the military.
Peter, this is Dr. Wills. I'm so glad that you came on to redirect, because that was one of the things that I wanted to make sure that we talked about before we wrapped up. I think our show really was focused on veterans, but thank you for broadening the conversation a bit. So again, police officers, firefighters, first responders, journalists. People often don't think about that, but journalists often get exposed to lots of crime. Lots of carnage. Folks who've been part of natural disasters, so people who've experienced tsunamis, people who've been in particularly tough car accidents, particularly if someone has passed away and they survive those times, people who are victims of physical assault, people who are victims of sexual assault. We often hear a lot about people who have been raped having PTSD. And then also, here's one, people who have unexpected deaths of loved ones around them. They may flash back and have PTSD to that. So there are a lot of different categories of folks in addition to veterans. I think our point here today was just to have two veterans on to really talk about it in that context, but there are absolutely more categories of folks who may, in fact, be exposed to such traumatic events that they may develop this syndrome. So really, really appreciate your call, Peter.
Well, thank you for that. And yes, once again, I appreciate the discussion, and I'll turn it over to the next person.
Thank you so much,
Peter.
Bye now.
Jamal's going to red team this.
Well, it's not a red team, but yeah, I really thank Peter for his call. I know he came in late in the discussion, but and I know Dante and Lawrence are still there, and I think they're going to appreciate what I'm going to say here. I mean, based on I know what Peter was saying, and then I know Dr. Willis said some things, everyone possibly could have PTSD to a certain extent, you know, and we all have had, let's say, I know people have them, loved ones dying in the holidays. I know personally family and friends who have that. But the thing about it is everyone can experience those things of PTSD. Dante and Lawrence are talking about, okay, so if you're a first responder, you see someone die or see something happen, okay, you go home to your family, that you can go to therapy. Dante and Lawrence are talking about being overseas for years and years, and every 6 months you get two, like, it's totally, it's not even a comparison. Like, well, and that's why the focus, like,
but I want to frame it. I don't think it's a matter of comparison, and you know, I think it's a matter of everybody deals with it differently.
But it is
right?
a comparison, like, because think about
what happened in Orlando, right? Where that nightclub got shot up. Right. The first responders walk in there, and there's 30, 40 bodies in there laying on the ground, blood everywhere. Like, that's going to affect them for the rest of their life.
How many times does that happen? That happens one time. I'm just saying. Well, Dante and Lawrence are talking about 23 people dying in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. Every day, possibly somebody's dying. Yeah. And, like, I have a friend who's a cardiologist at a hospital. People are dying all the time. But guess what? He's at a hospital here in the United States. He can go to a doctor every day. They can't even take medication over there. You're going 6 months straight out in the mountains. Dante and Lawrence, are you guys still there?
Yes, sir.
You guys see what I'm getting at? How it's a huge difference in my mind trying to even compare those two.
But
yeah, I agree, because I was thinking too. I was like, we have a relationship with all the people we're with. We're together in and out, day in, day out for years. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the first responders, I mean, yes, that's their job and it's traumatic that they see it, but there's no connection with those people. They're there to do their job, get it finished, and then, yeah, it's going to stay with them, but it's a different area.
They're
not, I mean, I understand what you're saying, but it's like for me, all right, for us, I can, you know I can pretty much speak for Dante too, because he nailed it. Like, these are people that you sat down with, you know their family, you know their wives, you know their kids, you know what I mean?
So I get that, and
so it's a and then to see them every day, and then you know what I mean? Like, either right in front of your feet. It's a different tone, because I was also a cop in the military. So yes, I responded to different, you know, suicides and accidents and stuff like that. Especially like when I was stationed in California, you know, I did highway patrol out there, and we seen accidents and stuff like that. And it's traumatic, but it's you're out there to do your job. For me, it wasn't the same. You know what I mean? It was traumatic, yes. But it's different from when somebody you break bread with every day, that you speak with every day, and then, you know what I mean? It snaps. I mean, I can see, like, where you have on the civilian side, if you live in a bad neighborhood and your family members getting shot up and stuff like that. To me, it's on that. You know what I mean?
But I think we also would be remiss, and Dr. Wills and I, and actually we talked about, say, R. Kelly, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, and Jamal, do you want to mention to our listeners, and again, you listen to the Urban Cafe on WMNF 88.5, wonderful conversation about PTSD. Peter from St. Petersburg just called in and wanted us to transition the conversation that this isn't just in scope for the military, but also in scope for civilians.
Oh, no. Yeah, I mean, I get the civilian side. You know, I do get that. You know, I'm not saying that, like, I'm only saying that there's a, I was just saying, like, the separation of the two.
So it's about that separation of the two that I'm struggling with, right? So I'm not saying the military, obviously PTSD is incredibly significant in the military, so yes. But I don't want to diminish what other people go through, and I know you guys aren't doing that. I totally know that.
Oh, no.
So if anything, I see it on a spectrum,
but
right?
I'm diminishing it.
I know you are.
And I'm putting it the spectrum, like, see, one is like the Patriots and one is like the Buccaneers. Because this is what I'm getting at. Okay, and Dante and Lawrence, correct me if I'm wrong. Someone is a firefighter or a policeman,
sure, like
in Orlando, they see this shooting.
Uh-huh.
In
South Florida, they see this shooting. They're here in the United States. They can get therapy every day, medicine every day. You guys are in the military for 6 months, and you can see 20, 30 people die, and you can't take medicine, and you can't get therapy, you can't see your family. Am I correct?
Yeah.
It's a huge difference.
Well, the only therapy you have over there is the chaplains to talk to, you know? But at the end of the day, you're still going to do your job.
Yeah.
And I get that, and again, I think it's a significant major issue in the military, but it doesn't mean it's not equally as impactful when somebody goes through sexual assault or when somebody goes through something incredibly traumatic. And I know you guys aren't saying nobody gets to own PTSD. You know what I mean? Like the military doesn't exclusively get to own PTSD.
No, I'm not saying that we own it. No.
Not what you all are saying. That's what Jamal is saying.
You should see it smile.
I'm the crazy one. I'm the crazy one here.
Before the show today,
I had mentioned R. Kelly, and I kind of think it should be two separate shows because I think that the difference in what you would see in the military. Versus regular, I guess, PTSD, not in the military, is so dramatic. Just because, like, I think people, I hate to keep repeating it, but if you can't have medication for 6 months.
And I want to get the doctor's opinion before we go to our final break here. Doctor, what do you think of all this?
Well, good discussion. Glad we're having it. You know, I definitely understand where Jamal is coming from, that the intensity and the symptom level and the embeddedment, being embedded in a situation for a long time, kind of creates a different type of exposure to the horrors. So I understand it, but generally speaking, I don't like to get into a thing where I'm ranking and diminishing one person's experience over another. And I get where he's coming from, but again, we got to think about all people in society, and I think even our guests would agree.
I would agree with that.
So before we come back to the PTSD championship, as Jamal would like to see it, we're going to jump to a quick break. You're listening to the Urban Cafe on WMNF 88.5.
We was praising Billboard, but we were young. Now I look at Billboard like, is you dumb? To this day, Grandma Frey, what I might say. They going to have to kill me, Grandmama. I'm not their slave. Check out the bazaar.
Don't pressure yourself. Like, the world makes it seem like we're supposed to have this beautiful balance, especially as mompreneurs, and it's not possible. I call it an organized juggle. At all times, I have two balls in my hand, whether it's focusing on my husband and time with him and my kids, then I rotate, then it's my kids and then one of my brands, and then I rotate, then it's time being a friend, and then this. So I just keep my balls rotating, and I do my best to just not drop. And if I do drop one, I remind myself that I'm not perfect, but as long as I'm doing my best, then that's enough.
And you know what, Rochelle? I think we forgive you for dropping a ball once in a while. It's all right.
This is Roman of the Urban Cafe, and I would like to take this time to thank those of you who have called into our show in the past. Now remember that we welcome your voice, and it's better to call earlier than later to ensure that your voice is heard. The number is 813-239-9663. We would love to hear from you.
Welcome.
Oh, yeah, man, how you doing?
I know you like that.
I don't have Clara to make fun of me today, so I'm going crazy. You're listening to the Urban Cafe on WMNF 88.5. You're listening to the Urban Cafe. Just a wonderful conversation. You can call us at 813-239-9663. We're talking about post-traumatic stress disorder, post-traumatic stress syndrome. As I've learned today, we got callers. Facebook Live is going crazy. So let's go to Ron in Mango, who's one of our callers here. Ron, good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear the little static sound that usually indicates that you're on the live. But anyway.
No problem.
Yeah, Ron's a veteran. I got a whole bunch of veterans, admirals in the Navy, all kind of stuff, warrant officers, and I serve myself, and I got a generations now of people in the military. And one thing I observed personally since that happened, I was encouraged to go in by my uncle who's in the Army, and they didn't tell us that he had been affected by Agent Orange. He went in when he was 17. And like Jamal said, this is what the difference is. He went in at 17, and he believed in that system all his life. So when he got his 20 years in, he barricaded himself in the barracks with his M16, so they court-martialed him and kicked him out with private tape. Okay, 5 years later, bring me on, because I had went in and I was working in Washington, D.C., and I was trying to help him get his Agent Orange money at that time and to get his benefits, because he was entitled to benefits at that time for what he did and how he served. And 5 years later, Agent Orange had ate his brains up, and they didn't tell us till he died in the VA that it had happened to him like that. And they blamed it on alcoholism and all that, and I'd like to clear that up too. That.
And what, Ron? What time frame are we talking about? Early '90s? When is this?
That was in the mid '80s, '80 something. He died from that, and he had spent his life, and you couldn't tell from the outside. You know, and then his children have been affected by Agent Orange as well, because all of them was born just in Vietnam. He went all over the place. He was Purple Heart, Silver Star. He had all those accolades. I used to love to look at him. So, you know, he was dear to my heart. And they treat veterans like, the other part is they treat veterans like they're not deserving of what they should have. You know, the system itself, after you get out, no matter how much you put in, like the guys were talking about, they was in combat. Well, check this out. I worked in an office with no windows, and I was the only person that could deal with people. And the people had I used to get their clearances and stuff, and one of the persons got mad one day and had explosives all in his locker and threatened to blow us up. This is 82. So we was on alert. They told us. They went and got him, confiscated him, and kicked his butt out. Then I saw a guy, this is combat too, I saw a guy come in the office with his fingers blown off. He's all his fingers blown off, and I knew him. I see him every day, just like they saying. I'm like, what happened? And they was trying to bring me into that field too, and I was like, I don't like that. Because every day somebody getting blown the hell up for their reasons or whatever, just to perfect some stuff and all this. So it's a very stressful job. It's a very stressful nature of it. And it's very difficult to compare it to any other situation, because every day, you could be on fire, and that's how it goes. Unlike all the other occupations or positions or persons, you have single mothers, you have single fathers, you have all of that in there too. So you have all those variables to include, and I just like to leave it like this here. You can't measure the PTSD on a veteran like that, because I couldn't see that with my uncle. He was always humble, and he always acknowledged power, and he let it long. He wouldn't fight it, and that's the disparity. That's the just that. Keep PTSD on the entire people or his community that see that and see how it do him, you know. And that's what we're up against. And when people say thank you for your service, I'm like, leave me alone, because you don't know nothing about it. You don't know nothing about this here. Leave me alone with that. I don't want to hear that, because, like I said, I got people in there. He died from Agent Orange. I got one Marine. He had the water poisoning from Camp Lejeune. He got the paperwork and everything, and they tell him in the pool he got it, he steadily died. Took out his kidneys. He has all the, you know, all the problems there. So I read his paperwork and looked at it. And they just dogged him out. They dogged me out. And I just like to say that it ain't all peaches and cream, so nobody can't say, well, always like this or always like that. No, it's a continuous thing. Plus, get this, we still in the military. If you're a disabled person, you get your card, you still in the military. You're never out. So that's a PTSD. They treat you like you normal. You're a citizen, and they won't give you your job based on that. They disparage me a whole bunch of ways. But this is the stuff they don't talk about. And I would like to come on and tell you more about that, because, like I said, I helped a World War II veteran get his benefit after like 30 or 40 years. Then when he got it, he died.
And I think that's a great conversation we can have. I mean, this is a very rich conversation we're having here. Ron, we really appreciate you sharing your expertise with the World War II veteran, with your uncle and yourself. We really appreciate that conversation. Thank you so much. And so I want to jump to another caller. Callers, we're getting a lot of you in the queue. We still have Dante and Lawrence on the phone as well. And so if you can try to keep your comments very limited, we're at the end of the show here soon. So Denise in Tarpon Springs, good morning. Good morning, Denise.
Good morning, everyone. My name's Dennis.
Dennis, my bad. It was spelled wrong on my... I apologize. I misread it. I apologize.
No worries at all. Hey, first of all, thanks for holding this important conversation. It's kind of faded from general media venues, and I just wanted to contribute a thought. I jumped in late in the show that there is a new movement, and if you guys want to talk about it, that's great. That's focusing more on post-traumatic growth.
Huh.
in opposition to post-traumatic stress disorder. I work, volunteer with a group called Warrior Reunion Foundation. We're out of Maryland. What we do is we offer combat deployment reunions free of charge to deployed combat units that wish to reunite, remember, and renew their bonds. We're having tremendous success cooperating and working with the Post-Traumatic Growth Institute out of Bluemont, Virginia, which is part of Boulder Crest Veterans Retreat Center.
Okay.
They're doing good work there in what they call the PATH program. I know there are many modalities to work with post-combat trauma and civilian trauma. The Post-Traumatic Growth Institute is focusing also on what you guys were talking about, that there is trauma in the civilian sector, in everyday life, law enforcement, first responders, and that they can all benefit from best practices, that it is not exclusively with the military, of course.
Yeah, which is a very important part of the conversation. And we really appreciate that, Dennis, for you sharing that information. We got to kind of keep it short because we got a couple other callers,
sure enough.
Dennis. But thank you so much. That's great information. We'll put some of that on Facebook. We really appreciate it. So our next caller is DeAndre. DeAndre calling in from Riverview. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. I'm like the other gentleman. I didn't hear the static before I come in. I didn't realize I was on the phone. Thank you for holding this conversation. I'm a little curious as to exactly how it's going down. I do hear there's like a competition between people who are civilians versus those.
Well, we're trying to avoid that. There's a little bit of a conversation, but actually, Nestor had mentioned it perfectly.
So I would say in this spectrum, in terms of how I see it, how most of us see it, with the exception of Jamal, I would say, and apologies for the phrase, but hell is relative, right? So somebody can go through 20 years of service and not be impacted by anything, but then somebody could have a one-day event on the civilian life and be impacted for the rest of their lives. Mm-hmm. So it all depends on that individual and their ability to be able to negotiate and respond to whatever it is they're going through, and that is relative to the individual. And that's why I'm saying nobody has the market on PTSD. I understand in some places it's more severe, but it does happen to everybody.
Go ahead, DeAndre.
I'm glad you said that, because the inner city situation has been plaguing like the entire U.S. like for years now, has set up situations where there are people who end up in their grave well before they have a chance to, really identify, things in their life that might be causing them to struggle, things that are definitely, require some mental health expertise, and it's not just like that one day thing. Yeah, it's in range, just like you're saying. Well, certainly, but I just feel like when I heard him say it, it's been something I've been seeing a lot lately. It's not just the military.
There's
so many different situations.
Yeah, like what's going on in South Chicago, for example. Mm-hmm. And so
exactly. There was a thing in Central Park, British downtown Tampa. It was first. You would hear a gunshot like every once a month. It'd be a car chase or something. Then it was every weekend. Then it was every night. Growing up, it was duck and cover.
And DeAndre, we apologize.
But I just wanted to get into that. It's like it's not just the military.
Yeah, 100%.
Absolutely. Thank you, sir.
DeAndre, thank you so much for calling in. And so we're at the very end of the show, and I want to give our awesome guests, Dante and Lawrence, yes. Just let you guys say goodbye to our listeners out there and to the crew. Let's start with you, Lawrence. Thank you so much.
I want to say thank you, and thank you for the opportunity just to get out there and just give as much information as possible. I appreciate the opportunity.
No, thank you for sharing a very personal story. We really appreciate it. And Dante.
Yeah, thanks for that. The time, taking time out of the day and let me talk. It does help us out, even though it's a small outlet, but it gives us a chance to talk about certain things and bring stuff up that we even think about but don't have the chance to ever talk about it. So it does help. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you. And I just want to say thank you from a civilian perspective. I never get the opportunity, because I was in the military, to really talk through a lot of this stuff. And this conversation was eye-opening 1,000 times over. So, gentlemen, absolutely, thank you so much for helping me understand both what PTSD is and how I myself can support other people that might be experiencing that.
And thank you to Jamal and Juju and Nestor, who was just talking. And so, Doctor, I'll leave you with the last word.
Yeah, the one thing that I did want to say is early may prevent some of the symptomatology.
Can you say that one more time?
Early intervention may prevent the development of the syndrome and some of the symptoms. So if you have been exposed to anything, make sure to get professional help as soon as possible so that you can debrief and get those feelings out.
And truer words could not have been spoken. And I want to callers, we do see that you were calling in. It was just late in the show. We couldn't get you on. We sincerely apologize. We're going to have this conversation again, I promise you. Again, thank you, Lawrence and Dante. And just I want to do a quick live read. Support for WMNF comes from our members in Live Nation, presenting Nile Rodgers and Chic live in concert at the Duke Energy Center of the Arts at Mahaffey Theater, Friday, January 18th. Get more info at themahaffey.com. And you listen to the Urban Cafe on WMNF 88.5. Thank you so much for listening to us this Sunday morning.
Thank you, folks.
WMNF 88.5 Tampa. Nobody.